creatures, even those that can fly without special means, has been blocked where flying's already blocked for the others. Thus, this certain someone will no longer be able to fly over cities or castles or whatever else. And, again, he is welcome to read all of this in the update notes. The flight jammers should only work around the outer perimeter. I just about dropped my hands from the demonstrative destruction that Eckler had visited on my side of the argument, but at the last moment a mischievous thought popped into my mind. There has to be a flying area inside the armada. These are players we're talking about here. Agreed. They wouldn't prohibit flying between the ships. Stacy came to my aid. The players would be outraged. A hole in the center should remain open. But how would it help us? The radius of the outer ring will be several hundred meters. You won't be able to build up the inertia to glide that distance. Don't forget that inside the no-fly zone, the system actively decelerates you and tries to make you plummet as soon as possible. It doesn't matter what speed you come flying in at, you won't have much of a chance.
On the one hand, you're right. I continued to develop my thought, having encountered support, as odd as it was. I won't have enough velocity or altitude to cover the prohibited area, so I will need your help.
Don't you have a fast ship, Stacy? It's not that fast.
Anastaria narrowed her eyes, unsure of what I was getting at. I love that look of hers, when she knows that she doesn't understand something, and it drives her insane.
If we really need it, we could get it from the pirates. But what for?
Since the airborne option doesn't, fly, I had another idea. We'll take a fast ship. Just one. We put a catapult on it. Just one again. We sail up to the enemy armada, using maybe like some kind of stealth or something, but maybe without it too. We get as close as we can, but in some way that keeps us relatively safe. Then we load the catapult with the tank, the DPS, and me. Should I go on, or will your imaginations fill in the rest? Eckler replied, cocking his head pensively, and finally ceasing to drill me with his gaze.
You're a real wonder, you know. I owe you dinner tonight and then some.
Anastaria's joyous thought popped into my head, as the girl before me reclined with a look as satisfied as that of a cat that had eaten its fill of cream.
Tamerlane the Wondrous will be our tank. No one will manage as well as he,
Eckler said after a short pause, more for his benefit than for ours.
As for the DPS, that'll have to be Plinto, or, well, I don't see any other option, really. Plinto's the only one who could pull it off in the time frame we need.
It's decided, then. Eckler shook his head, making some decision, and almost instantly reverted back to the kind, generous uncle. Like at the snap of his fingers. Snap, and you're looking at an entirely different person. I wouldn't want to find myself on Eckler's bad side.
Tomorrow I'll receive information about our enemy's movements and figure out the course they'll set on their journey. Stacy, you owe us a ship. Mayan, you need to make several test flights. You'll have to train turning into your dragon form in mid-flight, as well as catching the other players in mid-air. Get this part down pat. What else? I think that's about it. Let's get to work, then.
I still have a question that I haven't gotten an answer to. Even though Eckler and Stacy had already jumped up from their seats, wishing to get to work on the plan we'd just concocted, I remained sitting. Why couldn't we complete the dungeon during the next 2 weeks? No one will be bothering us right now, and the dungeon level is still manageable for Plinto. Surely we can handle this in 2 weeks. It'll be a cinch. The Urgrice, Anastaria answered simply. That's the entire problem. I don't understand, I shook my head. What does a crystal from a different world have to do with it? That's the point, that until I figure out precisely this question, it's a really bad idea to set foot into the tomb. Can you imagine what'll happen if that crystal has similar effects to the Tears of Harishes? After all, no one knows what kind of scenario has been attached to that crystal, and why any time anyone mentions it, they also mention the other world. I'd really rather not risk it. So the first thing we need is information, and we need time to find it. And it's time we don't have if we start trying to complete the tomb right this instant. If our plan with the catapult fails, I began. It seemed that today was my day because the ideas were just pouring out of me like a horn of plenty. The players from the other continents won't wait another month to buy a new obelisk. Why? It'll be faster for them to just conquer some nearby castle. Something tells me we need to prepare the Emperor and the Dark Lord against this idea.
Let's assume that we'll get an audience.
Eckler sat back down in his chair, though he remained in his avuncular form.
It doesn't seem to me that the Emperor will be happy to hear that we wish to keep him from selling someone a castle. We won't be able to keep other players from spending money on our continent.
Why not? Of course we can. The next idea came tumbling out of my horn of plenty. Everything depends on how we frame the problem when we pitch it to him. Any way you spin it, the interclan competitions will get underway soon. If I remember correctly, in 2 or 3 months. Doesn't matter. If we really wish to protect ourselves from our enemies acquiring castles, we'll need to arrange a tournament of the clans of Kalragan. We need to assemble a team of the highest level players. Why is Phoenix always participating in the competition anyway? What we need is some kind of dream team with representatives of all the clans. And when we organize and hold a tournament like that, neither the Emperor nor the Dark Lord will have any reason to deny our minor request. That is, not to sell castles to anyone for several months. After all, we would have united. We would be one whole. Doesn't the corporation love single holes? We'll give them just that, merely requesting a small favor in exchange, the chance to complete the tomb. If we don't achieve anything in 3 months, then we'll have to give up on the tomb. It'll be too much for us.
A tournament, Eckler muttered. We need to hold a tournament.
And make sure that Cartus and Shadow participate as well. I nodded in agreement.
What do we need Shadow there for?
For ornamental purposes, as well as for the unity of the entire continent. They'll be responsible for providing us with monsters to kill. Or at least that's one option.
Shadran,
Eckler said quietly. And a phantom materialized several steps away from me. The majordomo of Phoenix's main castle was a phantom orc.
I need a cost analysis for holding a tournament which would be attended by 3 emperors.
draw up a tournament ladder that resembles last year's continental competitions. Limit the number of entrants to 10 million.
"Shall I factor in the costs of building the venues?"
the Phantom inquired immediately. Unlike my Viltrius, this majordomo performed his orders professionally and without any unnecessary hand-wringing. Perhaps I should tweak my goblin's settings a bit? Although I kind of like him the way he is.
"The location of the tournament will play an important role. If you plan on inviting all three emperors, we'll need a castle in the Freelands. It's simply not possible to use a location in one of the empires."
"Ultimita's in the Freelands," I offered. "I'll provide a portal for anyone who wants to come."
"Accepted," Eckler echoed. "How's that cost analysis?"
"According to the input values, the cost of holding a tournament is assessed at between 300 and 420 million gold. Prizes and rewards are not included in the cost analysis."
"What would we have to do to submit a request to hold a tournament like this?"
The calm voice of Phoenix's leader did not suggest that he would regret parting with such an astronomical amount.
"The request has been drafted. Please confirm it."
"So, what's next?"
Making several passes with his hands, Eckler first looked at me, then at Anastaria, who had arranged herself in her chair to more comfortably observe this expenditure of crazy sums of money. Stacy barely managed to shrug her shoulders before a shimmering portal appeared beside us. Even hobgoblins couldn't restrict a herald from doing his job.
"The Emperor wishes to see you."
Chapter 2 Unforeseen Difficulties. Residents of Calragan, in 3 weeks' time, the Phoenix and Legends of Barleona clans shall hold a tournament to determine the best players of our continent. This tournament's winners shall defend the honor of Calragan at the global inter-clan competitions. During the preparatory period for the tournament, and until its conclusion, free citizens shall no longer be permitted to kill other free citizens. The tournament shall be held in the Freelands. Free teletransportation shall be provided by the sponsoring clans, Phoenix and the Legends of Barleona. Become the best. Enter the tournament and show your worth. Information about the various contests and categories will be posted to the official Barleona site in 4 days. Make sure to check the news. The enormous system notification blotted out everything in sight, including Eckler's pensive face.
"I'm assuming it's too late to back out of this," he asked the Emperor, who was looking majestically down on us from his throne.
"Once every blue moon, the audience seems to take place in the palace's throne room instead of the typical round table of the Emperor's study. I'm not even sure if I should consider this an honor or not." As soon as we appeared before the Emperor, he asked us if we were sure about our decision, and, receiving our affirmation, sent the previous message to the entire continent. And yet, he'd never said anything about blocking PvP mode, and this condition came as a sudden and very unpleasant surprise to us.
"You can always back out," Naughty replied, "even despite the fact that the continent's residents have already been notified of the upcoming event. Judging by your shocked faces, you have some doubts. What are they?"
"The tomb of the Creator," Anastaria replied cautiously, carefully choosing her words. There are other players from the other continents sailing in our direction. Their objective is straightforward. They want to take away our right to be the first to complete the tomb and solve the mystery of the Urgrice. Now, with this condition you've set, we've effectively lost our ability to defend the tomb from the other free citizens, which is why Eckler inquired about the possibility of calling off the tournament. We weren't ready for this.
I have spoken my word, and my word is not subject to revision, the Emperor clattered off implacably. All duels between the free citizens have been blocked until the culmination of the tournament. Sooner or later, the mystery of the Urgrice will be solved, and it doesn't matter who'll do it, you or the newcomers. The power of the Urgrice is so great that we cannot afford to send favorites or unworthy sentients to face it. Only the truly mighty free citizens will be able to deal with the secret of the crystal. Anyone else will be annihilated, along with all of Barleona and all its continents. I can still cancel the tournament. You only need to request it. Do you truly wish this?
Eckler and Nati locked eyes and froze in place. The air between the clan leader and the Emperor seemed so charged that if any sentient stumbled between them, I imagine it would be sent to respawn immediately, regardless of whether it was a player or NPC. The heavy gazes of the two self-assured administrators would have destroyed it in a blink of an eye.
"We would be happy to arrange the tournament,"
Eckler gave up after an eternity that lasted an entire minute. The icy glow vanished from the Emperor's eyes, and the head of Malabar added,
"I knew that I could count on you. As for the tomb, consider how you can safeguard it without resorting to force. It's not up to me to tell you that any problem could be solved in a number of ways, and the forceful approach is not always the best way out of a difficult situation. The prohibition against combat will cover all the free citizens, regardless of their territorial origin. But enough about the tomb. Since we've decided that the tournament will go on, I'd like to discuss the concessions that the Phoenix Clan expects to receive for rendering such an enormous service to the Empire."
"Not just Phoenix,"
Eckler corrected the Emperor.
"There are two clans organizing this tournament."
After 30 minutes of negotiations, I understood only that I had ceased to understand anything at all. Eckler bartered and haggled with the Emperor like a cook at a market, and Nati, for his part, didn't budge an inch, wringing his hands and complaining that Phoenix was trying to bankrupt his empire. Literally, a few minutes ago, they were ready to incinerate each other with their eyes, playing the parts of spoiled princesses who looked down proudly on this poor world. But as soon as it came to eking out an extra gold piece, it was like Eckler and Nati had been replaced by two strangers.
"I have an idea,"
Eckler said suddenly, smirking at my bored face. What else could I do? I simply wasn't very interested in what province could help us with what resources, in what amounts, how the logistics would be arranged, what bonuses were best exacted from Cartus, what villages and even towns would be handed over to our control, what percentages from the selling of attributes would trickle to our treasury. This just wasn't in my wheelhouse.
In order to make our discussion more productive, I suggest we invite Serart, the treasurer of the Legends of Barleona, as well as someone from Cartus. I'm sure that the Dark Lord's representatives, or perhaps he himself, would be happy to discuss how to organize the tournament. As for Anastaria and Mayen, I suggest we let them go. Negotiations aren't really their cup of tea.
Agreed,
the Emperor said, and several moments later, the heralds had delivered Mr. Krestowski to the main hall, while a magister of Cartus emerged triumphantly from his portal. The preparations for the tournament began to burble with renewed force.
"What'll we do about the tomb?"
Anastaria asked pensively, as soon as the herald had delivered us to Phoenix's castle.
"Surely we're not going to defend it using NPCs. Suggestions?"
"Well," I muttered, "unfortunately, nothing's coming to me, except for the most obvious and simplest option."
"What's that?"
"Since PvP is blocked for everyone, then no player will be able to squeeze through a tight wall of other players. It's one of those situations where a crowd of newbies can stop a crowd of level 400s. The important thing is to hold the line and block any flying. The entrance to the tomb is pretty small, so we can hire some minnows, arrange them in several chains, and make them work in shifts. The downside is we'll have to arrange a round-the-clock watch. And, plus, we'll need some device that jams flying, which they could break, so we'll also need...
"Daniel, you're a genius!"
Anastaria interrupted me happily. She jumped up and began to pace back and forth with undisguised impatience.
"I'll work out the details, and we'll find the right people either in our clan or from Dad's. I'll talk to Serart this very day. Damn it! This really is the simplest option, and, what's stranger, the most obvious one. Even the Emperor was hinting at it. This is what happens when you get used to playing at the higher levels. All right, we've settled this issue, then. I'll set up the guards this very day. Send me an invite to the Legends. It's no good when the husband and wife are in different clans. Player Anastaria has joined the Legends of Barleona. Current rank, Deputy Head."
"Congratulations on your return," Plinto instantly wrote in the clan chat. "Are you going to be here for a while, or are you just stopping by for another fling?"
"Baby, I'm planning on going to see my trainers and teachers, and then I have to go see Nash Lazar,"
Anastaria went on, leaving the rogue's quip without a reply. Adjusting her already perfectly arranged hair, Stacy embraced me, placed her head on my chest, shut her eyes in pleasure, and forced me to embrace her.
"What do you think? Can the teachers wait a half hour?"
I asked her in a hushed voice. Despite the time we had spent together in the game as well as in reality, when Stacy was so close to me, my breathing locked up treacherously, my head filled with noise, and a warmth spilled out in my chest, filling my whole being.
"Quest completed. Tight-knit family. Step 1. Speak to the High Priestess of Iluna to receive your reward and the next step in the quest chain."
"How about later tonight, Dan?"
Stacy gave me a cunning glance and slipped playfully from my embrace.
"I just knew that there's no reason to wait all 30 days. It's enough to prove that we're together again. Shall we go see Elsa tonight?"
"So that was all for the quest?" I almost choked from outrage, but Anastaria instantly reappeared in my embrace, her hazel eyes shining in triumph from yet another victory.
"I love you too, my darling.
she meowed in my ear, giving it a nibble in the process.
"Will you drop me off at the Paladin's training grounds? In the evening I promise to suffer my deserved punishment."
Grudgingly fulfilling Stacy's wish, and still upset by her trick, I decided to busy myself with chores. Since I'd been so suddenly promoted in levels, it makes sense to find out what this gives me. The time had come to become a real shaman. "Hi, Flyda. What are you up to?" I began by contacting my student to determine her progress. Something told me that if I show up in front of Cornick or Prontho without this quest, I'll get an earful.
"You cannot communicate with your student telepathically without first establishing a private bond."
"What?" I sent the request to Flyda again and again, but received the same answer over and over again. Our telepathy was blocked. The system didn't tell me that my student wasn't in the game. It told me that I wasn't allowed to speak with her without an amulet. How was this possible? Coming to grips with the futility of making further attempts to contact the shaman, I decided to ask Cornick to explain what was going on.
"You cannot communicate with your teacher telepathically without first establishing a private bond."
"It's a good thing that this here wall is right here, so I can lean against it in my shock. I'm sure that the spectacle of a shaman harbinger collapsing to the ground with his face contorted in amazement would make the rounds on the Barleona forums. My telepathy had been blocked.
Stacy?"
Panicking, I sent a thought to Anastaria.
"What happened?"
came Stacy's immediate reply, and I relaxed a little. Only now did I notice that I had tensed up like a coiled spring in expectation of the answer. Even though everything had worked fine just that morning, the corporation could easily put an end to something like telepathy whenever it felt like it. Never mind. I thought the corp had blocked my shamanic powers.
"Not all of them. I get the impression that all the undocumented features that we've been using before the update have been disabled now. For instance, I can't speak with Iluna without first getting permission from the priests or simply asking them to do it for me. Despite the status, a warrior of the goddess isn't supposed to speak to her directly. I'm sitting here trying to figure it out as we speak. What about you?"
"So far, all I've discovered is that I can't speak with my student or my teacher. I'll start testing everything else."
"Let me know what you find tonight,"
said Anastaria, and disconnected. Here I discovered that even the act of disconnection was now so palpable that I had even gritted my teeth. Before the update, Anastaria's thoughts would appear in my mind suddenly and leave it just as unexpectedly. But now it seemed like everything was happening according to strict protocol. "Do you wish to speak with your second half? Your second half has terminated your conversation. Please rate your telepathic exchange. What's that corporation up to with this update?" I made my way to the shamanic training ground and opened the spirit summoning interface. My heart skipped a beat. The panel was empty. Entirely empty. All 8 quick slots were utterly bare, as if I'd never used them before. The spellbook icon was blinking conspicuously, drawing my attention. A bad premonition. I opened the spellbook and cursed one more time. At the moment, I could only summon 2 minor spirits, of healing and of lightning. And that's it. Even though I was still learning an enormous number of summons, the spellbook contained nothing at all.
Our failing apprentice has decided to honor our humble abode.
Cornick's wry voice sounded beside me, forcing me to look up from the book.
What doth his harbingerness require of us?
Teacher, I bowed my head deferentially, slipping on the mask of the student. Please, explain to me what has happened with my powers.
What about them?
The goblin asked with mock surprise. It was obvious that he knew what was going on. I can't get in touch with my student. I can't get in touch with you. I don't have any... Patiently and methodically, I began to itemize all the bugs I had encountered up till now. Perhaps they were features, if you looked at them in the right light.
"Of course you can't get in touch with us," smirked Cornick. "Have you established a private bond with me or your student?" "Nope." "Did you inscribe the spirits you were taught into your spellbook?" "Nope." "Did you do any of what every other ordinary shaman does at all?" "I'll give you one chance to guess the answer. I wouldn't be surprised if you have no idea what your student is doing at this very moment. Oh, woe is me. I can't reach her telepathically. How about just calling her on the old amulet? And you call yourself a teacher. Be thankful that you still have the power to jump all over Calragan like some interdimensional flea. I'd take that away from you, too, were it up to me. How can you summon spirits if you give no thought to your elemental? The supreme spirit of water doesn't even remember you any more. No, things can't go on like this. You, my remedial student, will have to learn how to be a true shaman instead of the strange paradox you were before the cataclysm. It doesn't do, after all, to go about summoning rank 50 spirits while still at rank 1.
If I had done everything like an ordinary shaman, I would have never become Harbinger. I wasn't about to let this NPC berate me unanswered. According to you, I'm not acting like an ordinary shaman. So what? Every shaman has his own way, and I have traveled mine to its end. According to you, the supreme water spirit's forgotten about me? Do the shamans have rules that they must follow in their practice of shamanism? Or is there some ideal shaman out there somewhere that I have to compare myself to? The shaman I was before the cataclysm is a very real shaman. If someone wants to destroy him in some manner, then I'd prefer to hear the truth. So do me a favor and quit telling me this nonsense. I've heard plenty of that over the last few months.
Oh, you're scaring me,
Cornick continued to mock me.
He doesn't like nonsense. He's so no-nonsense. No, sir, no nonsense for him. You're my student. If I tell you that you need to relearn something, then that's what you have to do.
It doesn't make sense to do whatever you like, and then later scour the free lands in search of a problem you should have solved months ago. You have to be like everyone else and follow the rules.
Guernica offered a deal,
sounded Prontho's voice behind my back. I turned and bowed my head respectfully before the head of the shaman council. I guess it's some holiday today, because it's not every day that you see the head of the council outside of his office.
He agreed to destroy the Heart of Chaos if Illuna and Tartarus adjusted the abilities of all free citizens to conform with the standards of their chosen classes, that is, to the main class template. The Battle of Armard demonstrated to Guernica how unpredictable the free citizens could be, so he decided to do this.
"And the gods agreed to this?" I asked, surprised. As I recall it, Renox was supposed to sacrifice himself in order to destroy the Heart of Chaos. Did the corporation really revise this scenario? What did they not like about non-standard players? The entire game was built on our shoulders, after all. The most interesting part of Barleona was the option to improvise some unexpected power or solution. Maybe the Corp had gotten tired of constantly correcting the scenarios to account for all the things we came up with?
"Don't you see the consequences?"
Prontho raised an eyebrow inquisitively, managing thereby to demonstrate his immense dissatisfaction with my all-too-obvious question.
"But why?"
I sighed, trying to ignore the orc's reaction.
"Why do the gods want the free citizens to be average?"
Prontho didn't bother to give me an answer. Turning triumphantly and losing all interest in me, the head of the shaman council headed toward the only building on the training ground. Our audience had ended.
"Kornik?"
Realizing that I shouldn't expect anything more from the orc, I turned on the goblin.
"What do you mean, Kornik? Any time anything happens, it's always Kornik, Kornik, Kornik,"
aped my teacher.
"You've learned all there is to learn, and much more than everyone else, I might add. I'll say it again. You need to act like everyone else, and avoid trying to change anything. I doubt that Illuna or Tartarus would leave a loophole for their favorites. Why would they? I'll be waiting for you tomorrow. We're going to learn how to summon spirits all over again."
"Pshaw! Now I've seen it all. A harbinger who hasn't a clue about how to be a shaman. What a nightmare."
Still muttering into his nose, Kornik stepped a few paces away from me, gave me another glance, smirked, and vanished. The air around me filled with the buzz of other shamans, many of whom had never seen Prontho in the flesh before. For my part, I tried to detach my mind from it all. Kornik had basically told me outright that it was possible to go on summoning the spirits in my accustomed manner, so I had to now consider this matter in the proper manner. I didn't feel like becoming an average shaman.
"Mayan, it's been so long,"
Favaz, my jewel-crafting teacher, who had become first among the masters of Anhurs, welcomed me with sincere happiness. The workshop that had been destroyed during the blooming of the Ying-Yang had long since been restored. The gnome had added several floors to it, so that now the pitter-patter and bustle of the craftsmen housed up there descended down to us. Over the last half-year, the jewel-crafting profession had undergone a renaissance. The popularity of this profession now rivaled that of smithing or tanning, and consequently had affected the costs of the ingredients and prices of the finished products. Even before the cataclysm, Mr. Krestowski had begun sighing about the bygone days when a simple gold ring of +5 to some old stat cost a mere 100 gold. Now, however, the price of a ring like that was lower than the cost of the ingredients you needed to craft it, which was making the crafting of low-level items prohibitively expensive. On the other hand, the gathering and mining business was on the up-and-up. Players were buying up stacks of ingredients by the thousands, wishing to become the next exquisite jeweler and dazzle Barleona with the craftsmanship. "Teacher," I bowed my head, as per custom, greeting my senior. The Barleona NPCs really get off on subordination, and bowing your head or curtsying one extra time never hurts. "I am pleased to see your workshop is prospering."
"It's all thanks to you."
In a fit of gratitude, the gnome placed his hand on my shoulder, pouring oil on the fire of my vanity. If I had any vanity, that is.
"It's no small honor to say that I taught a jeweler who managed to cause the Ying-Yang to bloom. Every new free citizen who comes to study with me first asks whether Shaman Mayan studied here at some point. Even if you did not learn the basic skills from me, the polishing and faceting of your trade was the work of my hands."
The gnome called over one of his assistants, issued a curt order, and then ushered me into the next room, which turned out to be a reception room.
"I saw your recipe,"
Favaz went on, offering me some tea.
"A very curious solution, giving lovers a chance to speak telepathically with one another. Have you made one yet?"
"Only one set," I replied, sipping the tea and noticing the temporary boost to my jewel-crafting stats. Even if it was only +10 for 60 minutes, the important thing was that Barleona now had drinks that would boost your profession. A welcome feature for players who had dedicated themselves to crafting. "I need to create several thousand pendants, but I have no idea where I'll find the time to do it. 3 or 4 minutes per item is too much, much too much, and that's why I'm here. Figured you might have some useful advice for me."
"Why, what could I possibly advise you?"
The gnome spread his arms.
"The only thing you can do is sit down and get to work. You can't transfer the recipe. You can't not do the work. So the only thing that follows is work, work, and more work. You have to work, even when you're taking a break from working. There's no other advice I can offer."
Suddenly, the sound of shattering glasses resounded overhead.
"Why, that no good, useless, armless thing!"
Favaz yelled in anger. The gnome cast me an apologetic look, then glanced up at the ceiling, then back at me, and, trying to speak calmly, added,
"Mayan, please, wait for me here. Feel free to read the books or have some more tea. I'll be a second. I had told a certain dunderhead to wash the windows, and what do you know? The oafs shattered them instead. Why is it that some free citizens can create unbelievable things while others can manage to break even a cast-iron sphere with their bare hands? How do you all manage to be so different?
Despite his young age, the jeweler got up with a creak and shuffled over to the ladder to issue his punishment to the hapless player. I even grew curious who it was who'd messed up so badly. But since the gnome had asked me to wait for him in his room, it was better for me to stay put. It's hard to believe that Favaz doesn't have the information I need about how to create the pendants, so risking my attractiveness with him right now would be a bad idea. I heard the sounds of argument come from upstairs, mixed with a girlish sobbing. The dunderhead turned out to be female. My desire to go take a look grew to such a degree that I even stood up from the table and approached the staircase. Right at the last moment, and by sheer force of will, I managed to change course and stopped beside a small bookcase. Since Favaz had granted me the permission to read the volumes on the shelf, then there wouldn't be anything valuable or useful among them. And yet, in the hopes of overcoming the desire to go upstairs and have a laugh at the hapless girl with the other players, I picked up the first book I came across and began to read it. Myths and Legends of Jewel Crafting. The update had not affected the mechanic of reading literature in Barleona. Until you'd read the entire book, it would forever open to the first page, and the only way to flip to the next one was to read the entire text. The imitators were real sticklers for ensuring these rules were followed. To my immense surprise, I liked the book. Either Favaz selected the books for his modest collection very carefully, or this work simply resonated with my current state. All I knew was that it was really interesting to read about the great jewelers of the past, who created true masterpieces with their cunning and artistry. How many amazing items had been created only to be lost to the ages? Marvels such as Borgia's Ring, which the oppressed gnomes presented to the head of the orcs, thereby earning their liberty. Or the Chain of Desires, created by the elves and presented as a gift to the king of the dwarves. To make a long story short, the Chain of Desires only made the desires of the elves come true, and as a result the poor dwarves spent several years serving the long-eared folk. Nowadays the dwarves deny this simple historical fact, but a legend wouldn't lie now, would it? I had to catch my breath when I saw an illustration of a whimsical ring with a green stone, Tourmaline, a ring of tourmaline with the symbol fashioned from the Maline mineral, a ring created by Carmandont for the Lord of the Elves, who in the end never did accept the dominance of men. It's only in the present day that the Kingdom of the Light and Dark Elves occupies the north of our continent. In bygone times, this people lived throughout all of Kalragan, exceeding humans both in terms of population and their artifice. Not wishing to conquer the elves, Carmandont created the Tourmaline in the hopes of demonstrating that humans could not only fight, but create as well, and do so at a level that surpassed the elves. The elves never did get their ring. The caravan that was transporting this artifact was ambushed. The Tourmaline was lost, forever vanishing from Barleona and becoming one of its more vivid myths. I didn't remember the moment that design mode enveloped me. Simply, a moment came in which I realized that I was in a large, well-lit room filled with shelves, workbenches, various jewelers' tools, two furnaces,
copies of the items I'd already created, and many other things which would make the process of crafting items in Barleona much more pleasant and effective. Looks like, along with my updated character, the corporation had also presented me with the official design mode. After all, I never did complete the quest chain that unlocked it. Like hell! My sudden desire to craft the Tremelorn vanished on the spot. I don't know why, but I became so used to working in my old gloomy design mode that now I felt incredibly uncomfortable in this well-lit room. It was like I was naked and on stage in front of a large crowd. No doubt there are some who like to show off their bodies, especially if there's something to show off, but I'm not one of them. This brightly illuminated workshop had everything I needed to create efficiently, even a separate panel for making sketches, but I didn't actually need any of that. Opening my mailbox, without even having to leave design mode, I began to compose a letter. Let them figure out what to do with me on their own. I want my old design mode back. Dear admins, I'd like to bring to your attention that I have stumbled upon a rather embarrassing design mode, now active for my character. I understand very well that it would be a pleasure to do my crafting in such an environment. However, I would strongly prefer that you return my old dark design mode to me. It is highly unpleasant for me to realize that I have been stripped of the chance to complete the quest chain for becoming a creator. Thank you. Rereading my letter, I sent it to the admins with a mean smirk. Now, whoever's responsible for me only has one way out, returning everything to the way it had been. The corporation can't ignore my letter. They're the very reason that I had become a certain Shaman Mayan. If I begin to voice my displeasure, heads might start to roll. And who needs that? No one. And, in the same way, they couldn't disable my design mode in general and force me to complete the quest chain. Who knows when I get around to doing it? Maybe in a year, maybe in two. When there's time. At the same time, I, as a jeweler, have the only recipe in Barleona for an item that allows couples to communicate telepathically. Here, the corp would have to either toss the recipe and inform its player base of this, or agree to my conditions. And both options suited me just fine. Any way you spin it, the corp didn't have much of a choice, so they'd have to give me back my initial design mode. After all, I'm ready to fight for it to the bitter end.
"That's a good book," sounded Favaz's voice, snapping me back to the game.
I looked around with surprise and realized that during my cogitations, I had managed to leave design mode and was now standing beside a bookshelf, holding the volume of the jeweler's fairy tales in my hand.
"It's too bad that the items described in it are merely the stuff of myths. I would happily study the structure of several of these artifacts and attempt to make a recipe.
Teacher, this book speaks of the Tremelorn. Where else may I read of this ring?"
"The Tremelorn?" the gnome echoed with surprise. "What do you need it for? This ring is useless to humans. Oh, I beg your pardon, dragons. Besides, it's just a myth, a pretty tale about a master jeweler of the past.
Experience shows that when it comes to Carmandont, the myths tend to be true. I'm interested in this sentient, both as an individual who existed, as a hunter who became an emperor, as well as a craftsman who created the chess set, the Altarian Falcon, the Tremelorn, and the Three Emperors.
What other miracles did Carmandon's hands conjure?
The Altarian Falcon?
Favaz furrowed his brow, trying to remember something, but then shrugged and muttered,
I'd never even heard of that before. Mayan, I understand your desire, but I have to disappoint you. I don't have the quest you're looking for. Perhaps the hermit has the answers you seek. One of our masters told you about him, I believe. Have you visited him yet?
That's right. How had I forgotten about that quest? According to my initial understanding of it, the hermit could be Carmandont himself, since no one knew where the Emperor's grave actually was, or whether it exists at all. But let's leave these hypothetical theories stand, both of the hermit and of Carmandont, while we continue to pump Favaz for all the info he's got. Unfortunately, neither before nor after the cataclysm have I managed to visit him, but thank you for reminding me. Teacher, I'd like to return to my initial question. Is there some way of accelerating the production of the pendants? Are there perhaps some elixirs, such as your tea, that will increase not only craftsmanship, but the speed of crafting as well?
Elixirs?
The gnome rubbed his chin pensively and stared at the ceiling.
There's one elixir. But no, that won't do. A bit of nonsense, a fairy tale, no more. No, I really don't think that anything will help.
Please forgive my rudeness, but I heard something about a fairy tale. What did you mean?
A perfectly ordinary fairy tale. The alchemists have spent the last several millennia trying to recreate Merlin's potion. To no avail. According to those legends that you hold so dear, this elixir has miraculous effects on craftsmen. What exactly it does remains unclear, but the only documented case of someone quaffing Merlin's potion led to the creation of the current imperial palace by one man alone in one day. No one remembers what his name is, but everyone knows that he used Merlin's potion, which was given to him by Carmandont.
Again, Carmandont? I blurted out.
I guess so, yes. Again him,
the gnome said thoughtfully.
The man was an architect, so the jewelers didn't really pay much attention to the affair. But, you know, it really is interesting. There's never been any other mention of Merlin's potion, whether before or after. I wonder how the first emperor acquired it.
The gnome fell quiet, following his thoughts into nirvana. I tried to continue our conversation, but Favaz answered me in monosyllables, indicating that it was time for me to get going. Trying not to bug the gnome, I again picked up the book about the legendary jewelers and opened it to the page with the Tremelorn. The ring seemed perfect to me. The desire to enter design mode and try and recreate this masterpiece again began to smolder in my chest, but I made an effort and pushed it away. I didn't want to craft in the illuminated design mode. Returning the book to its place with a sigh of disappointment, I began to make my exit. However, as I was passing through the workshop, something held me back. Something stopped me. The players around me were diligently crafting rings, taking no note of their surroundings. Almost all the workbenches were filled with laboring craftsmen.
but only almost. Right next to me, an empty workstation winked and nodded at me like some solitary nymphomaniac. Realizing that I needed to go meet the hermit and figure out who and what was going on, I approached the table.